Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and on this day in history, Ain't Misbehavin' by the great Fats Waller. He recorded this on this day in 1938. And welcome back here to the Mark Steiner Show. We are about to have a conversation with Dr. Lillian M. Lowry, who is the, I was going to say new, but it's been 2 years, the Maryland State Superintendent of Public Schools. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let me turn this mic over to you.
Okay. Thank you.
And you all can join us out there, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner to join the conversation with Dr. Lowry, 410-319-8888. And I keep thinking of you as you being brand new, but you've been here, so.
Yeah. I've been here, working hard.
So talk about this year. You alluded to something in the hallway. You said new and different things are happening. What were you alluding to?
Absolutely. As most people know, we are making the transition to new college and career-ready standards. Last year was the first year that everyone was required to start implementation, and we believe that this year is going to be much smoother because teachers actually live the year unpacking the standards building resources and materials to use. And we will be making the transition from the old Maryland State assessments and some of the high school assessments to the new PARC assessment.
The PARC assessment. Let's talk a bit about that.
Okay.
We've talked a lot about that on this air and had many debates on it, pro and con, over the last several years. And one of the things that there's a bunch of things with this, I think it'd be important to kind of throw out here. And some people argue and have argued very eloquently that the online only testing is, as been shown in New York, can be disadvantageous to disadvantaged communities where the computers are not there in the schools, and also where kids are not as facile on computers as kids in upper-class areas or middle-class areas, so they have no access to them. And actually, the disparity in some cities, like New York, were greater after taking these tests on the computer than they had been in the past.
So we are planning for that. We learn vicariously through other people's experiences. And the PARC Consortium in total decided that we would make this a 3-year transition period to the complete online assessments. So our General Assembly is paying very apt attention to this particular concern. We have a task force that merged the request of Senator Pugh from Baltimore City and Senator Rosa Pep from Prince George's County to, number one, give great data to the General Assembly as to how ready some of our schools are or are not. And then the other side of that, if we were to look at some kind of weighted formula to help those districts who need help, how would we kind of put numbers around that that are real and tangible?
So why wouldn't that kind of beg the questions we would ask that maybe this whole thing is moving a little too fast, that there are too many kinks to work out in terms of technology and other issues? Among them, we'll talk about in a minute, just the kids taking this test, we've never even had this kind of curriculum before ever, that maybe this is just being pushed too quickly, that we should slow it down.
So I don't want to in any way take away the reality that some people are not as prepared as other and other people are in some districts. But the good news for Maryland is we've been doing online testing for over 11 years. We're using the same vendor, Pearson and ETS, and we are using the same platform, just a new iteration. We were TestNav 7.5. That's the platform that we use to give the test, and we're moving to 8.0. And so our teachers are familiar with how to access. So we have about, across the state of our 1,450 schools, of those students who are being tested in English, language, arts, math, and science, about 60% of our schools were already using technology.
67%.
About 60% were already using. And so we also are, as I said, looking very carefully at how we can use time, because what we also did at the PARC Consortium was change the testing window from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, so that as we make the transition and build up the technology that are available, that we would have more time to schedule.
So what does that say, that 40%, that means 40% of the kids do not have sufficient technology.
Right.
That's a lot of money. That's a lot of kids.
Right. And as you will look around the area, for example, just in our area, Howard County is in a great place. They've been building their technology for a long time. Baltimore County, Dr. Dance, and those folks are proliferating the technology that they have. And Dr. Thornton is all over this as he has come into the city. But we have taken opportunities to them. For example, there's a federal program where they get computers from all the agencies and states can access that. We are working with some of our private industry partners who every 3 or 4 years also refurbish their technology needs. So we are not just talking about the move to technology. We're also helping our districts think through what options there are to build the need.
So I do want to encourage our listeners, parents, students, teachers, you're about to start work. Some of the teachers have already started work. Mm-hmm. But you may be on your break. Give a holler, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Log on to our Facebook pages. We'll read some of these emails coming in, 410-319-8888. We do want to hear what you have to say. That Dr. Lowry is with us only for a half an hour. Next time she comes, we'll have a much longer discussion. And please, we want to hear what you think. 410-319-8888. This is you, your students, your children, and you, the students themselves. So please call 410-319-8888 as you talk with Dr. Lowry. So going back to what we were talking about a moment ago, I just not to be a pain about this, but that there's some papers did this whole piece that you I know you read, right?
Right, absolutely.
About how far back so many of these schools are. I'm just looking at the sheet here that's saying that $100 million in outstanding technology needs, 85% of schools studied could not give the online test and still have enough computer bandwidth to take care of their schools. That's why I keep saying, are we just doing things, should we get all this in place and really even test out this curriculum before we start seeing if it works and if the schools are ready?
Well, number one, I think that's why the state said that we wouldn't really use the data from the new curricula and assessments until 2016-17. We are in the middle of a six-year transition. So we didn't just start this transition last year. Last year was the year that districts were required to be implementing. We actually started this transition in 2011, and our teachers and schools across the state have been in professional development around implementation of this for since 2011, helping us write this out. And so we also need to look at the fact that we do have the hybrid opportunity, so we will have paper pencil until 2016-17 for them to use. But now let's just get back to, are we too fast?
Yes.
That really is a question that I always get. We are being as deliberate about what we do and how we do it in collaboration with the people on the ground who are really delivering the work as we possibly can. I would say without question, approximately 2/3 of our teachers absolutely have embraced the new standards. Excuse me, have embraced the new standards and are looking forward to the consequences for our students, which will be beneficial. The technology piece is a piece that we will work around. And let me make sure that people understand that $100 million price tag that was not that we wouldn't be able to assess students. We can assess students tomorrow in all of our districts because most of them were using technology anyway. What the superintendents were pushing, and I agree, is that if we're going to assess our students this way, we should instruct our students this way. So the $100 million price tag was not for just readiness on giving the park assessment. It was also the district's building out an entire continuum of technology needs so that teachers would have access to one-on-one devices in their classrooms every day to instruct so that when we got to time for testing for students, they would be most comfortable with the technology.
You know, teachers always talk about, and I remember from my days in the classroom as well, which was a while back, that teachers always complained about is to some principals, the flavor of the month. That schools are constantly changing curricula, constantly changing testing. And many people look at this, oh, here we go again. MSA, that was supposed to be the pinnacle of all testing, and now we have something new. And so I think it's hard not to fault people in, who live their lives as educators to be a tad jaundiced about a new system that all of a sudden is being pushed into a system, and they're just waiting for 4 years down the line when this too gets replaced by something else.
I want to give an example that Tom Friedman gave, the writer, the editorial writer for New York Times. He was here in the state of Maryland at the State Chamber of Commerce convening, and he shared that when he wrote his book, The World is Flat, meaning our children are no longer competing with just a neighbor next door and the state next door, they're competing across the globe. When he wrote that book in 2004, there was no Twitter, there was no Facebook, there was no LinkedIn. In that short time, 10 years later, that is now a way of life. There was no Google. None of that existed. And so people are understanding more and more that the future that our children face will be far more dynamic than the ones that we've faced. I mean, each generation has gotten better, wiser, but we cannot continue to believe that what something that we adopted in 1990 or something that we adopted in 2000 is still adequate to prepare our students for what's going to be waiting for them 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now. So I think states like Maryland that are high-performing states are smart to always step back and look at what we're doing and how we can do it better so that we prepare our students to be competitive globally.
Do you think, I was thinking about, as you were saying this, there's a conversation I had with some students, I guess about 6 months ago when I was giving a talk to some students from a program in Baltimore. Some of them were about to be graduating seniors. This program helps at-risk students get beyond. And this was made not just because these kids were at risk, because I say this for any child, no matter where they come from, is that, you know, I looked out of the window there, and on the roof were all these air conditioning containers across the roof. And I looked out the roof, and I said, "Do you know what those are?" And some of the students did, some of the students didn't. And I said, that's $75,000 to $100,000 a year making a living. Mm-hmm. Do we do a disservice by thinking that every child has to have a bachelor's degree, has to have a master's degree, has to have a PhD in mathematics or physics or anything else, when some people are critically saying that our schools are not getting young people ready who could go to get AA degrees and other things that prepare them for jobs in plumbing, in electricity, in computer maintenance and technology, in HVAC, you know, technology, where there are jobs. I ran into a guy, it's a quick thing, at the airport the other day, and he was fixing one of those belts that people ride on, right? And so it was just a topic conversation, and these guys are making $50 an hour. Or more, fixing those pieces. And they're usually in trades that are reserved for white people and black folks. People of color can hardly break into those trades to make a decent living, which is how we built the middle class. Having said all that, are we doing a disservice by not building that part of our education system where we can train young people's minds but also give them skills to make a living?
I am so glad you asked that question, because that is not what we're doing. When we talk about college and career ready, we should really probably talk about it in terms of career ready and then the different pathways to career, because as we work with the Governor's Workforce Investment Board, Martin Knott chairs that, he and others are talking about the mid-level skills to which you refer that are waiting for these children if they could get with some trades union or some kind of associate degree program that prepares them to go into those jobs and be able to work their ways to better quality of life immediately. Everybody doesn't want to go off to a four-year college or university upon graduation from high school, but that's why we focus on college and career ready. And if I could just give you this example.
Please go ahead.
Last week, we were at MACO, the Maryland Association of Counties, and I had one of the commissioners from Washington County approach me talking about this young man who's 17 years old, just graduated from high school. He owns an electrician's company. And he had hired this 17-year-old right out of high school to put him in a trades program. He said that there are three levels of classes. This young man, they've already advanced to the third level of class because he came out of his high school program so far advanced to others who are entering the program that they proliferated his pay and his authority and responsibility as he's moving forward. So I will say to people in Maryland that we do have career and technical education programs in this state that are aligned with some of the mid-level skills and some of those jobs that can't be outsourced. You can't outsource plumbing to China. If your toilet breaks, you need somebody.
Anyway.
You need somebody to come and be able to fix it. If your electricity goes down, you need an electrician to show up. We are focused on that, but we are also working very closely with the Department of Labor to track the projection of what jobs will be out there available for our students 10, 15 years from now. And we're trying to reevaluate our career and technical education programs and make sure that we are teaching to the future and not just giving students an elective course in high school.
And a number of people who did not call in but have written in some thoughts, and so I'm just going to look at some of these just to share with you before the, okay. in the time we have left, and we look forward to a much larger,
sure.
larger more ranging
sure.
conversation in the very near future with you. One person wrote in, a teacher, could you talk about the trend of young children being suspended? Is it really a matter of children behaving badly, or does it have to do with children being in an environment that is ill-suited for their needs, such as large size classes and developmentally inappropriate practices? And also, just sometimes I think I'd add to that, are schools not knowing how to address certain children's behavior? And the stats have all shown that the studies have shown that young black boys in elementary school are more likely to be suspended than anybody else for the exact same behavior.
Absolutely. And Maryland is a leader in this across the country. You may recall that Secretary Duncan and Attorney General Holder came to visit us to kick off their national agenda around discipline. And the state board, our Maryland State Board of Education, gets great kudos. They have been working on this issue for over 3 years, and we've got the legislation through with the help of Governor O'Malley and others to actually look at progressive discipline more acutely. The Open Society Institute was a great nonprofit partner right there with us and helped fund some of the support that we needed to kind of pull districts and schools and advocates, if you will, for children into the same room to talk about this. We are looking at making sure that, to your point, if I run down the hall and you tell me to stop in one school and I say, shut up, I'm not doing it, and I get detention in another school, I'm out for 5 days, we are asking people at the local level, you certainly have the autonomy. We do not want the day disrupted, but use your common knowledge of the environment, the kind of instance in time to make a decision that's going to benefit the child. So it is a teachable moment and everything is punitive right from the start. There are things and instances where we have to take immediate action to remove children from schools, but we want people to be more thoughtful about what those are and look at other alternative ways to help correct students' behavior so that they learn what is appropriate and inappropriate or not. The other thing is that in legislation, we have now something called the Maryland Center for School Safety, and it will include also discussions around mental health issues for students and how we make sure that we flag indicators that should give us pause about what's going on with children and how we can be proactively strategic instead of waiting for something to happen. So the person named Ed Clark leads that. He's the executive director. He was with the Montgomery County Police Department and then ran school security for Montgomery County Public Schools for many years. Great touch and pulse.
Well, why? Having said that, again, I'm curious why you think you've been in education for a long time,
mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Yes.
Or you wouldn't be the state superintendent.
Okay.
Why is it that we are spend so much money and so much time on school security? I mean, I know this sounds like an old person talking sometimes, but I can remember that.
Right.
Even in our toughest schools growing up in Baltimore, I don't remember police walking the halls, having security. I mean, why do you think we're spending so much time and money on security? And some people would argue that helps kind of almost criminalize the kids that are in a public school system.
We're at a point where we would rather be safe than sorry. And when we have instances like Sandy Hook in Connecticut, and we could go on and name many more examples of where there could have been more secure tactics in place to help our children and their parents feel that if they come to school in the morning, they get home at night. So some of it is a response to real life situations where children have lost their lives. We had one example here in Baltimore County a couple of years ago where a teacher acted very heroically to shut down right. something that could have been very tragic. That's not why teachers go to school, but they certainly do step up. We need to have support in those buildings for them.
Very quickly, but what did you think of Peter Franchot suggesting that we should move school to after Labor Day?
Great. Our districts can already move school to after Labor Day. They have that flexibility. Worcester County this year actually decided to do that. I'm all for local autonomy around those kinds of issues. Baltimore City knows their children and their needs far better than I do, or the folks in Washington County know the needs of their students. So we look at that summer learning time and how children can lose that learning time. We look at putting children in structured environments for some of our students coming to school every day is where they get structured time and hot meals. And we want to make sure that districts get to make that decision on their own. But if they want to start after Labor Day, they certainly can make that decision to do so.
I just thought I'd ask him. It caused our conversation, but then our controller often kind of wanders into all kinds of domains when he has something to say. I was just curious. One of the things, one of the people wrote in, and we only have like 4 minutes or so left in the segment, is that Montgomery and Frederick County school districts, as this person wrote in, are considered the best districts in the state, some of them anyway, are among the best in the country. They don't link teacher evaluations to test scores. Should the rest of Maryland follow their lead?
So just please let me, with all due respect to Montgomery and Frederick, these people need to visit some more of our districts because we have some really good districts in this state. Montgomery and Frederick have lots of competition about being best. We have great teachers in every district. We are looking at, as long as we have huge achievement gaps, we have to be very mindful of how we are putting in processes and how we are looking at data to improve that. I absolutely take nothing away from any of our districts. That's why Maryland, the state of Maryland, has been one of the highest performing states in public education for years because of the quality and the expectation of excellence in our schools. But we have an achievement gap. And it's not just with those folks that may come to mind. We have children who are in the middle, just as we have children who struggle at the bottom, who can get lost in all of what we do every day in schools if there is not a laser-like focus on them. And the only way we can have individualized, customized, laser-like focus on each of our students is to look at the data to determine how they are growing and how effective we are in helping them achieve.
But I mean, I guess part of the question was because of the teacher evaluations, there's still a controversy around the notion
right.
of teacher evaluations,
right.
how they can really be used effectively or honestly, and that with the new curriculum of PARC, many people argue that takes away from the creativity and individuality of teachers being able to teach.
So I'm always interested when people say standards take away from creativity. What standards do is present to educators the best research-based knowledge and skills that students must master in order to be college and career ready. And then teachers and leaders at the school level can be as creative as they want to in how they do that. The state does not give a prescribed curriculum. The state just works with educators across our state to make sure that we have the appropriate standards so that our children are competitive. Creativity, vision, all of those things still occur at the local level, and we have people doing a great job in the state of Maryland.
Well, Dr. Lillian Lowery, this has been a pleasure to meet you at last.
Thank you.
And to have you in the studio with us.
Thank you.
And we look forward to a much larger, longer conversation
sure.
At some point, and really have a longer one and talk about many issues that are facing the states. And we didn't get to the question of Thornton coming to an end and what our response to Thornton is going to be, which I think is an important thing for us to wrestle with as well, and many other things. So I look forward to being able to have that conversation sometime maybe in the next month, having you back.
I look forward
to it. For an entire hour.
Okay.
It'd be great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So our guest has been Dr. Lillian Lowery, who, of course, is the state superintendent of our schools. A reminder on the way out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services, MeQ Baltimore's credit union is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. For more information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org, click on MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. The Mark Steiner Show is produced as a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our interns are Sienna Greaves and Sam Saper, whose last day is today. Thank you, Sam. Heading back to Carver School out in the Baltimore County for his senior, rising senior. He's not rising so much anymore. He's there. So he's off for his last year in high school. He's been a great asset to us here this summer. If you hear this show again on podcast, any of our past shows, you can visit us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. And what do we got here now? Let me see what this is. We are listening to, we're going out with Guns by Brixton by The Clash. That's why I didn't know it. I don't even like The Clash, but they did this on this day, so we're playing their music. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, celebrating the 88 days of summer, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.